Our second panelist is Thanasis Stengos, professor of economics at the University of Guelph. His presentation is titled, The Severity of the Recession in Greece. Are multipliers to blame? And if yes, which ones? Thank you.
Thank you very much. My talk is going to be a continuation of what John did, but concentrating on some slightly bigger pictures that essentially plagues not only Greece, but Europe as well. And the main question that one asks, perhaps, is how come? How did it happen? Greece experienced stellar growth between 1995 and 2007, above the average of, you know, its European partners, and yet it's experiencing now one of the largest depressions that any country in the post-World War II period has ever experienced. One of the main obvious reasons is that, of course, the debt trajectory that Greece was following over the years was not sustainable. So the thing here is to understand the deeper reasons behind this lack of sustainability of the debt accumulation that Greece had, and why, for instance, Greece collapsed, and Japan, which has a debt to GDP ratio of over 200%, in other words, it's much worse than Greece, has not collapsed. In fact, if anything, Japan right now borrows with a negative interest rate. In other words, you pay the bank to keep your money there, so to speak, with a real negative, of course, interest rates. So this, you know, focus of the debate is really to understand the reasons behind that. There has been a lot of work in the last 2 years in economics, in macro and growth work, to understand exactly the effect of debt on growth and the debt on business cycle fluctuations. And there is the work that I'm stating here by well-respected economists that essentially have used the most recent techniques in statistical analysis to essentially see what is the so-called magical threshold, so to speak, where if we go above that threshold, you have a problem. If you are below that threshold, you are okay. And they found things to be between 80 or 90% of the GDP debt to GDP ratio to be about that. However, this analysis that all these works did were based on the assumption or the idea, so to speak, that all countries belong to the same club, to the same institutional club, so to speak. However, this is not correct. We have, just to promote my work, I have a work on with two co-authors, Andros Kourtelos and Jimmy Tan, on the effect of public debt on economic growth, and we find that public debt is a problem primarily for economies with very poor institutions. And it's much less of a problem. In fact, it could even have a neutral effect on growth for economies that have well-functioning and developed institutions. And just to give you an idea of what I'm talking about here, let me give you some facts about institutional quality rankings for Greece from the most recent World Bank Doing Business report. Ease of doing business. In 2012, Greece was 78th, 26th in the European Union of the 27, improvement from the 89th position in 2011. Procedures required to start a business, 170th in the world, 27th in the European Union. Strength of investor protection, 127th. Time required to enforce a contract, 159th, last in the European Union. Control of corruption, 94th. Government effectiveness, 71st. Regularity quality, 65th. Rule of law, 72nd. Now, let's look at GDP. How does GDP measure against the previous facts? Well, indeed, GDP has fallen nearly 25% during the last 3.5 years, and it is back now to the 2004-2005 nominal levels. Okay. Greece's world ranking in GDP per capita was 29th in 2009, is 34th in 2011. Well, Greece is still a rich country, if you look at GDP. Yet, this picture here tells you that Greece is still a big country despite the recession, but with very, very poor institutions. And this is exactly the problem that we are facing here. And the reforms that are essentially important here are so essential that without these reforms, reforms which essentially would call for improvement in institutions, there is no way out. Prolonging the borrowing period for 2 years, as the Greek government was trying to do, or asking for extensions of this or that, would help, but will not solve the problem. The problem of the Greek economy right now is a supply side problem. It's not a demand side problem. And a supply side problem has to do with the lack of microeconomic institutions. First of all, at the center of everything, is the lack of a well-functioning legal system. We have in Greece, per 100,000 people, 29 judges. In the European Union, for the same number of people, there are 19 judges. It takes 3 times as long for any case to be, from start to finish, to be completed in Greece than in the European Union. We have an archaic educational system at the tertiary level, which essentially does everything except for human capital development. It is a system that you all probably are aware of, where, you know, it is a place for political gamemanship between political parties, or at least until recently, because there has been attempts and, in fact, things are moving in the right direction, things are changing there. So everything was happening except for creating knowledge, if anything. And, of course, a byproduct of a subpar educational system was the very meager investment in research and development, which was the lowest in Europe and one of the lowest among the OECD countries. And, of course, there are other things that Yanis mentioned earlier, monopolistic structures and very strange labor relations, which go back to the Metaxa years of before the Second World War. The Greek political elite has been raised knowing only demand-side economics, and absolutely they had no idea or no concept of understanding that there is a supply side as well. And demand-side economics work for big economies where, in fact, the government can increase spending, and in that way can essentially use this approach to pick up slack in investment that the private sector does not produce. However, in countries like Greece, where most of the government spending was creating excess demand for consumption to be spent on exports, a lot of the multiplier effects that were happening before the recession were essentially creating a situation of pure consumption and no investment. Now, how is the story essentially going, looking at, from a typical economics textbook? Well, the idea is the following. Wages fall because there are recessionary cuts in the demand side. In other words, people produce less, factories lay off people, workers, they ask for lower wages fall, fine. But prices ought to also follow that fall in wages. And that's essentially the idea. Yet in Greece that does not happen. Only wages fall, prices do not. Why is that? Because there is a monopolistic structure, non-competitive structure of the wholesale trade, which essentially, when wages fall, they only affect incomes, but there is nothing in terms of really creating a pressure on prices to fall as well. And that was the problem that essentially was an architectural problem that was not recognized early enough. The assumption of a well-functioning economy is that you have essentially a competitive economy where fiscal consolidation encourages private investment at lower wages, and that lures private investment and the recovery starts. However, as I said, this is not that's something that you expect in a well-functioning economy. That is not what happened in Greece. How do we move forward? Institutional reform. This is the only way out. And you start with the judiciary. We have, as a Greek parliament in Greece, they have passed more laws, more than any other country in Europe and any other country in the OECD group. For example, there has been attempts, and you read in the papers that people have been arrested in the last 2 years, 3 years, for tax avoidance. Well, yes, they are being put in jail. And the problem is, in that case, you think, is jail the appropriate venue for somebody who avoids taxes? Well, perhaps. But why do you try first to get them, to get their case through the system so that you can get what they owe you? This is a much more important situation that only yesterday there is a law that passed that essentially is trying to do just that, 3 years down the road. And until last summer, the Lawyers Association in Athens was fighting any speeding up on any fast-track judiciary measures at the Supreme Court to avoid having to deal with situations where they would be spending less time at the courts. Okay. So, what is the minimum benchmark to see how the Greek economy can get out of this current slump? The benchmark is to see how fast it can approach improvements in the institutional ranking that were presented earlier. This is the only meaningful multiplier that we are really have to face in the long run. And any other measures for fast improvements in this institutional will essentially help, but will not fix the problem. And I will just also put that in a European perspective at the end, because that is quite important, and that calls into question some of the original assumptions of the European project, the architecture behind the European project as it was implemented through the Eurozone and the Maastricht Treaty. Demand-side multipliers are different, are fast-moving, and they are different in good times than bad times. They are different between revenues and expenditures. Revenue collection, if you want, gives you a better fiscal drag, that means less of a contraction, than cutting expenditures. However, this is the place where the Greek government and the Troika is pushing towards that, has been dragging its feet. They cannot basically collect taxes, not only because of the recession, but because they are putting people in jail and they are not going after the amounts of money that they could have gone by putting, I mean, there are people who have enormous amounts of illiquid assets that could be liquidated. Why don't you do that? Okay, just to give you another example of how things work, in 2010, for the first time in Greek history, there was a registry of public employees of the narrow and broad public sector. In fact, it was done in record time. All public employees did register. The number was announced, and that was about it. So we knew that we had about 700,000 public employees in the narrow sense and about 950,000 in the broader sense. That includes the army, that includes everything. Nothing happened. There was no streamlining to see who does what and where. And essentially, there was no attempt to start implementing reforms that would make some of these people who work in the public sector and do a good job be rewarded for it, and those who do not show up for work, they should be fired, as in any other country that has logic behind its system. There are, at this point, the law that says dismissal of a public employee is the hardest law to break in any OECD country. You have to apply criminal justice criteria, beyond reasonable doubt criteria, to show intent that the person did not show up for work or did things intentionally to harm the state, which is very hard to prove. You don't have evidence. You have evidence for criminal justice, but in any other country, including Germany, including the Scandinavian countries, is balance of probabilities. Okay, let me give you another example. Ireland. Ireland, as Greece, about the same time, moved into the same recessionary spiral. In fact, the Irish deficit in 2010 was 31.3% of GDP. Greece that year was 10.8%. Greece was much better. Now, the cost of business startup procedures in Ireland as a percentage of GDP, G&E, the same thing, per capita is 0.3 in 2012, whereas in Greece is 20.5. Well, guess who is going to get out of the recession faster? I leave that to you. How long would the crisis take? As long as it takes to implement the reforms. The problem is that in the long run, in the short run, there may be measures. We may get things moving a bit. There is no doubt that this will happen. In fact, we have, you know, Greece has hit bottom right now, and there is only way but up, except that there is another scenario which says that this up process will take a lot longer than if you had good institutions. And you may stay there for a long time unless you clean up your house, unless you introduce better institutions. And, of course, this is, you know, the usual. You have to produce, and you have to keep producing by getting your primary deficits down, and essentially you cannot always import beyond your capacity. And, to be honest, at least one thing that has happened in Greece, which is in fact, remarkable if you think about, you know, the problems that, the country faces, is that he has managed to get the primary deficit close to zero. And he has managed also to eliminate the biggest part of the external deficit as well. So in fact, fiscally speaking, Greece is good. It is in a good situation if you were in 2005. You could be thinking this is a great place to be. However, there is a lot more that needs to be done. And this a lot more to be done has to do with quality of institutions and how do we get there. And unfortunately, the European project and the fiscal lack of fiscal consolidation and unity and, in fact, the lack of fiscal union that was not considered as part of the Maastricht Treaty. There were simply criteria that were supposed to be met. Thought that a fiscal union would be too much to ask for because we need the political will for countries to essentially give up sovereignty to do so. However, it's not fiscal union, it is institutional union that essentially we are talking about. In fact, in Europe at this point, there are three clubs. There are not just two. It's the club of the northern countries, the club of the southern countries that include essentially Greece, Spain, and Portugal. I'm not including Italy there. And there is the club of France, Italy, and perhaps, who knows, others who might move into that right now. For instance, even though Holland is in the northern hemisphere in terms of positioning, it has a lot of structural problems as well. So we don't know how things will work out. However, the main point is that unless you move towards institutional harmonization, the European project is not moving forward in a positive way. And as far as Greece goes, Greece should do that irrespective of whether the Eurozone will be there 10 years from now or anything like that. In fact, the opportunity here is that given the fact that any other reform period would not take place unless you had this atomic bomb falling onto you, which happened in 2009 with the recession, if you want, unless everything is up in the air, things in Greece would never work out in a piecemeal way. In fact, there was an attempt to reform, and I will finish that, to reform the pension system in the late 90s, and with a marginal increase in contributions and retirement ages, which would have saved the debt, accumulated debt by an estimate of 45 billion euros, which is a substantial thing. It's basically the amount of the first bailout. Without that, it was totally cut down, totally shut down by the public, by politicians, by everybody who went out on the streets at the time. And this was a minor adjustment, much more benign than what Greek pensioners and anybody else who is working now has to face. Thank you very much.